Good morning, how are you guys? My name's Nick, and I'm the Student Ministries Director here at SCF. And I just want to thank you guys for being here today. Student Ministries Director, what that means, if you're not aware, is I teach normally the middle school and the high school group. So I have from sixth grade up until senior year of high school with me. This morning I get the opportunity, and it's just fun for me, to teach on a day like today, where we have more than one congregation in here. So you guys are aware this is a combined service of 9 and 11, but there's actually two more services in here with us today. Our middle school group and our high school group are both here with us as well. So it's an awesome opportunity for me to be able to teach where we are gathered together as one body to worship at one time. And I'm just super excited about that this morning. Now, if you're a part of any of those services other than the 9 a.m., there's someone I'd like to introduce to you because there's something you might not know even happens every 9 a.m. service here at SCF. That's Lynn over here. She is our sign language translator. And I'm going to ask Lynn to stop for just a second this morning, and I'm going to take over for a little tiny bit. So, thank you for making SCF a more welcoming church. And I'm going to stop there because I've forgotten way too much from when I took it in school. So, I took 3 years of sign language, or 3 semesters in sign language in college. And it's always been a soft part in my heart of the deaf community. And I love that we are at a church where someone like Lynn makes it a point to volunteer to come in on Thursday nights and get the message and the songs in advance, learn them, know what she needs to say, and then translate every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. So, Lynn, thank you so much for what you do with us. So if you are new to SCF or it's been a while since you've looked at our welcome message, I want you guys to take a look at the cover of your bulletin this morning. That's our welcome message, and just like Lynn's making this a more welcome place by doing sign language, I want you to take a look at that, and hopefully you'll see yourself in that message. And if you don't, I want to express a special thank you for being here, and I want to welcome you and let you know that we welcome everyone through our doors here at SCF, and we are glad you're here today. Now, if you're like me and you don't normally grab a bulletin and you avoid it at all costs, because you know, for people like me, if I have a paper and a pencil in front of me, I'm going to draw and I'm going to doodle and I'm not going to pay any attention to what's being said. So I avoid it. But if you're like me with that today, we are going to be using our bulletins a little more than normal. And so if you don't have one, if you go ahead and raise your hand, one of the ushers will come down and they will get you a bulletin this morning. Before we get started. So for the last 10 weeks in the youth ministry, in the middle school and high school, we have been going through the book of Nehemiah. And Nehemiah is one of my favorite books in the Bible. There is so much fun in this book, so much adventure and plot twists and just crazy stuff happen, that we've spent 10 weeks going verse by verse through this book. This morning, I want to invite you to join us along in this journey, and I'm fully aware in a half hour, there's no way I'm getting you through with the detail of this entire book. But I'm going to pick one of my favorite, most compelling themes of the book to go through. And I hope that, if nothing else, you'll be able to see an overview of the book of Nehemiah, parallel that to your life, and hopefully you'll have a little bit of a spurred interest to go home and read this book on your own. Like I said, this is one of my favorite books of the Bible, and it's one of my favorite things to teach. So what we're going to do is just kind of jump into an overview of the book. And we're going to start with looking at where the book starts, obviously. And Nehemiah, when we open this book, is living as a slave in the court of the king, a Persian king, which means they're in exile. The Jewish people are in exile. In other words, even though God gave continuous warnings through his law given to Moses, through his prophets saying, guys, you need to straighten up and get back on course, Even though God warned them, the Jewish people chose to turn their backs on God and live their lives on their own terms. And because of that, God said, look, if you do that, if you don't follow me, I'm going to bring in foreign rulers that are going to put you into slavery, and they're going to take you from the land I promised you. This is what we call exile. And for some of us, that might sound a little bit harsh. Why would God just all of a sudden drop this on them, put them in slavery? But like I said, this was already the deal that was set forth in the book given to Moses, as well as the prophets giving numerous, numerous warnings to turn back to God. And the reason God's doing this is not just as a punishment. It's because God chose the Jewish people to be his representatives on earth. And if they aren't following him and living the life he called them to, then they're not representing God well. And he has to do something to correct that. So Nehemiah finds himself in the court of the Persian king as a slave. And he finds out that his brother and a few others have gone back to the nation of Judah, the city of Jerusalem. And he asks them, hey, what are things like back home? And we're going to start with verse 2 of chapter 1. And it says this. Hanai, one of my brothers, came from Judah with some other men. And I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile, and also about Jerusalem. They said to me, those who survived the exile are back in the province, are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire. When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Now this response of mourning and fasting and praying sometimes doesn't get read with the proper emotion. And I'll fully admit, I am horrible at reading emotion into Scripture when I'm reading out loud. But there is an emotional response here. He sees that things are not the way they should be, and he weeps, he mourns, he fasts and prays. One of those things that we don't necessarily understand here, what his emotional response is because we don't live in their culture. When he hears the wall is down and the gates are burned, what he hears is his city's safety is gone. No wall means no safety. No safety means the city is at risk. If the city is at risk, then the temple of God is at risk. And their place of worship might not be intact. This is so much deeper than a wall and a few gates. This is his culture that is mourning for. The loss of his culture and what he knows to be true. Another way that I can maybe get you to latch on to this idea of an emotional response is Nehemiah was hurt by hearing this. I think there was a day that we all were also hurt. I think for the majority in this room, we can remember back to September 11th, 2001, exactly where we were when we heard the news of what happened on that day. If you can remember exactly where that is, go and raise your hand really fast. See, this is stuck in our mind because these images, they hurt. They're burned into us. For me, I was a freshman in high school. I was at Galena High School in Mrs. Calhoun's room in room 102. I did not have her for a teacher yet, but for some reason, I found myself in that room. I can remember sitting cross-legged on top of a desk watching the news all day. And for me, I didn't know how to respond. I sat in silence and just watched. For some around me, their response was similar to Nehemiah's of mourning and weeping. I think for each of us in our own personalities, we respond to what pains us differently. But we have an emotional response. That's actually your first fill-in this morning, is that Nehemiah was pained by what he heard. It hurt him. It cut him to the core. And I think that Nehemiah, for the rest of his life, could probably point back to where he was when he heard that the walls of Jerusalem were in rubble and the gates were burnt down. I think Nehemiah only has one response to this. He's lost. He's not sure where to go. He's hurt to the core, and his response is to call out to God in prayer. And that's our second fill-in today. Nehemiah prayed. He was pained emotionally, and his response was to call out to God in prayer. The prayer that we see him record in the book is one that I find unbelievably honest and brutal. And we're going to read that whole prayer together this morning. It's in chapter 1, verse 5 through 10. O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God, who keeps his covenant of unfailing love with those who love him and obey his commands, listen to my prayer. Look down and see me praying day and night for your people, Israel. I confess that we have sinned against you. Yes, even my own family and I have sinned. We have sinned terribly by not obeying the commands, decrees, and regulations that you've given your servant Moses. Please remember what you told your servant Moses. If you are unfaithful to me, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commands and live by them, then even if you are exiled to the ends of the earth, I will bring you back to the place I have chosen for my name to be honored. The people you rescued by your great power and strong hand are your servants. O Lord, please hear my prayer. Listen to the prayers of those of us who delight in honoring you. Please grant me success today by making the king favorable to me. Put it into his heart to be kind to me. There are three things that I think are extremely important to point out in this prayer. The first is that Nehemiah doesn't pass this off as someone else's problem, that this was before his time that people walked away from God. He starts out with this heart of confession. Yes, even I and my own family have sinned against you. This idea is he's getting right with God and saying, I understand I'm at fault as well. I had a part in this. The second is, I think this is where I see him being brutally honest here. When he's pained and he hears that the wall is destroyed, his response is to call out to God saying, look, I understand this was our fault. So I'm going to quote what you said in Deuteronomy, that if we went away from you, you would pull us from this and you would take us into exile. But you also promised if we followed you again that you'd bring us home no matter how far we were. This isn't necessarily just stating scripture. This is a plea to remember what you promised. God, you said you'd bring us home. Why are we not going home? And I see a little more in Nehemiah in this, maybe saying, why would we want to go home? It's gone. The wall's destroyed, and you told us we would go home. But I think the third is the part we usually forget in our prayers. Nehemiah asked God to notice those who are following him. And he starts to bring up this idea that, hey, make the king favorable to me. See, Nehemiah is working as a slave in the king's court. And he's saying, essentially, God, use me. I see what's going wrong, and I'm hurt by this. I know why you have us in the situation we're in, but I'm willing to follow you, no matter what that takes. And see, Nehemiah's working in the court of the king as a slave, as a cupbearer. That's the very next line after this prayer is, I was serving the king as his cupbearer. And for us, we don't necessarily know what that means a lot of times. What a cupbearer is he's the person that's standing right next to the king. And every sip of wine and every bite of food that goes to the king, Nehemiah tries first to make sure it's not poisoned. It's not a very good job to have. But the king's got to trust this individual. If the king doesn't trust his cupbearer, then there's no reason to have a cupbearer. He trusts him with his life. And that's what Nehemiah's job is to do. But beyond that, the cupbearer oftentimes would be used as counsel to the king. And so this position as a slave has a little bit of privilege. And so Nehemiah is praying, God, use me in where I am. Make me favorable to the king. He ends up praying and fasting and mourning for 3 months. And one day the king notices that Nehemiah is sad in his presence, which is a crime punishable by death, by the way, if you appeared sad before the king. And so Nehemiah is standing there, and the king notices you look sad and asks him, Nehemiah, why are you sad? In chapter 2, we read his response. Then I was terrified, but I replied, long live the king. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins, and the gates have been destroyed by fire. And the king asked, well, how can I help you? With a prayer to the God of heaven, I replied, if it pleases the king, and you are pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild your city where my ancestors are buried. And the king asks him, hey, how long are you going to be gone? And Nehemiah's like, yeah, roughly 13 years. Sure, go for it. Seriously, the king's like, yeah, go for it. And he gets a little bit more bold. He goes, hey, I'm a slave. I don't really have any resources. Will you pay for everything so I can go and rebuild this city? And the king's like, sure, go for it. And Nehemiah gets even bolder than that, which is crazy. He starts thinking, and he's going, look, I'm a slave. That people know I should be your cupbearer and in the court of the king. And I have all of your resources at my disposal. People are going to really take that bad if they see this. Hey, can you write a decree with your seal on it? Wherever I go, it gives me protection and lets people know that you're okay with what I'm doing. And the king says, sure, go for it. This is crazy to think about. This is where we start to see Nehemiah, he's pained. He's praying about it. And when he prays about it, it's giving God an opportunity to move in his life. And God starts to put a plan in Nehemiah's heart. You don't go to the king with a shopping list like this without having an idea of what you're going to do. That's our third point, that Nehemiah planned. Now, even though he has this plan and he has this shopping list fulfilled, and he has the resources he needs, he still doesn't rush into his job when he arrives in the city. When we get to Jerusalem, we see he actually slows the process down to make sure he knows what he's doing. He doesn't want this project to be in vain. In chapter 2, a little bit further down, we read this. So I arrived in Jerusalem 3 days later. I slipped out during the night, only taking a few others with me. I had not told anyone about the plans God had put in my heart for Jerusalem. We took no pack animals with us except for the donkey I was riding. And after dark, I went out through the valley gate, past the jackal's wall, and over to the dung gate to inspect the broken walls and burned gates. Nehemiah takes the time to look at the wall and the state it's in. I think too often when we have a response of if we have a job we want to do, we walk up and say, well, that's broken, we'll fix that. But Nehemiah takes the time to look at the whole project. Make sure that he's doing it the right way. Knowing where the biggest needs are first. And so Nehemiah begins his work on the wall. He assigns different people to different parts of the wall. And he delegates the job out to those who need to be there. And the crazy thing is, Nehemiah finishes. He produces the wall. That's our fourth point, that Nehemiah produces. He has a plan and he carries it through. When we look at this, when he's building this wall, there's so much that goes on that could have stopped him. There's people who doubted what he was going to do. There's people who threatened his life and those working on the wall. There's rumors spread to the king that Nehemiah is not building this wall to rebuild his city. He's building this wall to bring safety so that he can become a king of Israel against you. And despite these rumors and despite these threats, Nehemiah actually finishes the wall. In fact, he does it so fast that it scares those who are opposing him. In chapter 7, it says, "So on October 2nd, the wall was finished, just 52 days after we had begun. When our enemies and the surrounding nations heard about it, they were frightened and humiliated. They realized this work had been done with the help of our God." Nehemiah was pained by something deeply to the point where he spent months in prayer. God put a plan in his heart. He pursued that plan and he produced the wall. And when he did that, the people looking on saw that God moved through him. This is an amazing story. And like I said, that was a really fast 1,000-mile view of the book of Nehemiah. And I hope that you guys can go and look at all that in more detail if you read it on your own. But if we leave this story to just that, then it's just that, it's a story. But we've got to call a parallel to our own life and see where Nehemiah's life can match up with ours. So the first thing would be, if that is the case, what pains you? Have you ever taken the time to realize what breaks your heart in our society, in our community? In other words, let me put it this way. Is there something in your life that you have said that's wrong? And someone needs to do something about that. Or maybe you say something along the lines, why don't they fix that? I'm going to spin it on you this morning. Why don't you be a part of fixing that? I'm going to give you guys some time this morning to identify something that pains your heart in our community. When you have that, I'm going to ask you to just write that below the point, what pains you, in your bulletin. The next step, if we're following Nehemiah's model, is to pray about it. To actually take the time to pray. I think too often as Christians, our prayers are so self-centered that we don't realize what we're praying. We ask God, I'm pained about this area or this problem, so why don't you fix it? And we expect God to move like a genie, to wave a magic wand and make the problem magically go away. That's not what we see Nehemiah do. Nehemiah admitted to where he was a part of the problem. He called God to remember the promises he's made to say, look, I have faith in you and use me where I am. What I'm going to ask this morning is actually that we take some time to pause in the middle of service. Whatever that issue is that pains you, let's take some time to pray for that. But I'm going to ask you not to pray for a magic wand. I'm going to ask you to be praying that God will show you where you can have a part in the solution. Now, if you have not yet identified something that pains you, that's okay. I kind of sprung it on you this morning without a lot of time to prepare. Up on the screen is going to be a list of things that I find and we find here at our church. In our community, these are some big issues. If you don't have something that pains your heart already immediately come to your mind, pick one of these and just pray for that this morning. So I'm going to give you some time and I'll call you back in a second. the next step in Nehemiah's plan is to make a plan. Identify what pains you, pray about it, and then make a plan. For us, too often, we skip through the parts that are important. It's hard for us to dwell in pain, to dwell in prayer. Nehemiah spent 3 months in prayer. I think too often we can't even spend 3 minutes thinking about what pains us. We want to scroll to the next thing in our feed and move on. I think the next thing that is easy for us to scroll past and move on is making a proper plan. It's easy to jump into things without fully understanding what the true need is. And this takes work. It's easy to say, I will make a plan, but this takes work, and you have to put the time in. When I was in college, like I said, I took 3 semesters of sign language, and I was surprised that I actually learned more about the Los Angeles deaf culture than I did about the actual language, and in particular, how Christians were viewed in that culture. The sad thing is, a lot of Christians, when talking to someone in the deaf community, will say something along the lines, I pray God will heal your hearing and fix you. And that might sound like something that's loving and caring for someone on the outside of the deaf community. But what majority of the people in the deaf community hear when they hear that is, I'm praying that God takes you from the culture and the community that you know and love and drops you into one you don't understand. That shows how ignorant we are when we assume what the needs are for some other group that we are not a part of. We've got to take the time to plan properly. Don't assume the needs in any area. Learn about that community, become a part of that community, and understand what the needs are. This is where I get excited when I see people like Lynn, who take the time to learn the language, to understand the community, and then volunteer their time to do something that actually is good for the community, where she comes and translates the message so that they can hear the message in their language, in their town, every Sunday morning. That's making a plan and doing something that is impactful. And I understand that making a plan is not always easy, and it's actually going to take a lot of work and time. And if you have no idea how to start making a plan in the area that pains your heart, we have someone on staff who's here to help you. J.D. Klippenstein is our local outreach director, and that's his job, is to get you plugged in and helping our community as SCF. And so if you have no idea where to start with this process of making a plan, this is why I wanted you to have your bulletin today. So if you look at your bulletin, underneath the line that says make a plan, is an email address, jdk@scf.net. Shoot him an email. Say, what breaks my heart is the problem with sex trafficking in our area. How can I get involved? And he'll hook you up with an organization called Awaken Inc. that we partner with. And he'll help you start that process. Or maybe you're going to say, hey, what pains my heart, we aren't doing anything as a church to do anything about it. And he'll say, you're right. Let's fix that. Let's start the process of figuring out what the needs in that area are. And he'll help you along that way. Please don't miss that resource this morning. Now, the final thing is, if Nehemiah prayed, planned, and produced the wall, and for us, if it's what pains you, pray about it, make a plan, the final thing for us is, just do it. Seriously, do it. Too often we say, yeah, this is what I want to do while we're in this room, but before we get into the car, we forget what it is that we were supposed to do. In fact, Brett taught on something very similar to this 1 week ago today. And a lot of us have already forgotten that. Some of the simple things that I have learned in my life of how to keep myself accountable to the things that I want to do is make notes, make alarms in my phone. What I've learned is if I set an appointment in my phone and put a date and a time and alarm, it'll remind me later on, hey, you need to do this. Now, what I've also learned is when that alarm goes off in my phone, I just hit silence and move about my day sometimes. So I actually tell my wife, hey, can you set an alarm in your phone and then bug me about it? You might be a little different. You might be someone who just needs to turn to someone next to you and say, hey, will you keep me accountable for this? You might be someone who brings out the same coat every winter. So if you fold up this bulletin and stick it in your pocket in your coat, next year you'll get a reminder, hey, did I do this or not? Whatever it is for you to make a way for you to be reminded of what you want to do, I'm actually going to stop now and ask you to do that now before you forget when you walk out of this room. So go ahead and take some time and make a reminder however you need to do that. Now this morning you might be saying, that's great, but where's the gospel in this? You're just talking about doing good things in the community. You're just talking about social justice. Where's Christ? Where's the gospel message? And I fully understand that question. You are not wrong to ask that at all. In fact, Jesus was asked a very similar question. Someone came up to him and said, Jesus, what is the most important law in the book of Moses? By the way, the same book, the same laws that Nehemiah finds himself in exile because they weren't following it. What's the most important of those laws? And some of you know this. Jesus replied, you must love your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. Second is equally important. Let me repeat that. Equally important. And second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. He says, love God, follow him with everything you are, love others as yourself, and take care of their tangible needs. If we think about it, our safety is probably number one concern in your life. We are in a position a lot of times where that's not even on our mind, but it's important to us, and we would stop everything we're doing to get that back. That's where Nehemiah finds himself with this wall. The safety is gone. He needs to take care of the needs like he would take care of the needs for himself. Nehemiah builds a physical wall of a physical city, but that's only chapters 1 through 7 of a 13-chapter book. Starting in chapter 8 of Nehemiah, we start to see Nehemiah calling the people to reconcile with God. He gathers them together, and he starts to say, look, the reason we were in exile is because we followed ourself and our own will, not God's will. Let's turn from that. And they read aloud the entirety of the book of Moses in one sitting. Nehemiah is able to bring people to reconciliation with God because he earned the right by taking care of their physical needs first. He earned the right and cultivated a relationship enough to where he had the authority to speak into their life about where God was calling them. This is what SCF is wanting to do with our Radiate initiative. If you're new to SCF and you have not seen these signs on the wall that say Radiate, what Radiate is we are calling the body of SCF to be more generous. And with what comes in from being more generous, we are spending the majority of that in our community here, taking care of tangible needs. And some people might look on and say, well, why are you doing a book drive? And why are all those books in the Agora? Well, because we want to take care of the tangible needs of our community. We want to help people understand how to read and improve their lives. Why are you involved with a dental clinic? Well, because that's something that hurts sometimes. And we want to be there caring for the pain in their life. When we do things in our community where we take care of them as if they were ourselves, that is the start of the gospel. Love God with all you have and take care of your neighbor as if they are yourself. SCF wants to earn the right to share the hope of Christ here in our community. That is what Radiate is about. That is what the book of Nehemiah is about. So as I finish this morning, I want to ask you a few questions. In that thing that pains you, where could God use that to bring forgiveness, hope, and reconciliation with God and his people? And are you willing to do the work to earn the right to cultivate a relationship with someone you know to share the belief you have and the hope you have in Christ? And will you actually do it? I hope you do. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Don't forget, next week we are back to our regular services at 9 and 11. And I've got a personal friend of mine coming as a guest speaker. And I really hope you guys join us. Thanks for being here. And we'll see you guys next week. Have a good new year.